And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 166. We're coming at you on a Tuesday night. That means it's Bloom Board time, everybody, as we keep going here through the month of September, which is the first episode in September, and the baseball season comes winding down for you. Before we get to your news, notes, and more, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're good, man. Hope you had a joyful Labor Day weekend. I was telling you before, it would have been tough for us to record a show over Labor Day weekend because I completely lost my voice from basically the end of our show Thursday until Monday. So my kids were home with me for 5 days, and I wasn't really able to yell at them, which was certainly a disadvantage on that front.
Yes, they took good.
They took full advantage of that and wore me out, but they get to go back to school, to daycare tomorrow. So doing good. Had a good weekend and ready to get back at it, man. September. Happy September.
Happy September. It's going to be good. Yeah, I had a good one. I took the little one to the ball game on Sunday. She got her Buster Posey Funko Pop. She's in love with it. She couldn't stop holding it like a little toy. And I got to explain to her who Buster Posey was, which is pretty cool, actually, as a dad, explaining what he
like
did.
Like an old man story. Oh, dude, like it was first, like, yep.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because she's like, why is his arms out? I'd explain Buster hugs to her and stuff. It was pretty cool. So it was fun there. And last day of the water park with our season passes on Monday because it closed after Labor Day. So she got to tear that apart on Monday. Back to reality now. Like you said, she's back in doing her school and all that fun stuff. We keep things going here and have some fun. And before we get into the news and other goodies for you on a Tuesday night, I'm going to pass the torch to you, as you know, at least more, you know, clear than I do. First Pitch Arizona, just a couple months away now. So what's the latest, greatest, what's available?
It's actually literally, well, 2 months from when we're recording, September 3rd. November 3rd is our Bubba and the Bloom Invitational. I'm actually calling the golf course in the mornings, different course this year. Had some things come up. To reserve a block of 4 to 5 tee times. So anyone who's interested in coming to First Pitch Arizona, it's Baseball HQ's by this point, we hope you guys know Baseball HQ's annual fantasy fest out in the desert, October 31st to November 3rd. There's a price deadline. I guess that's discount deadline this discount Friday. Deadline. So if you're interested in coming, the price will go up again after Friday. So if you're on the fence, like we've always said, message either one of us. We will both be there Saturday through Monday. Having a grand old time doing resolving our beer bets, playing golf, doing a live podcast, all that stuff. So yes, join us. And we've got less than 2 months, so we're not that far away, my friend.
Yep. Just around the corner. I already have all my stuff booked. I'm ready to rock and roll. I just need the days to get here, 'cause that means my work's pretty much done in the real world. Get to go have some fun in Arizona. It basically kicks off my down season where I actually do even more fantasy baseball content, which is always exciting. So, looking forward to First Pitch Arizona. It gets the juices flowing every year to start because we get drained. I know people probably hate hearing it, but it's a long season doing stuff. And the podcast actually is the least draining part of the entire process, weirdly enough. It's like the part that we enjoy the most. But every time at First Pitch, Ryan will laugh at me because I'll have my notebook out and I have about 50 catchers written down and I start prepping for 2026 and it gets very exciting and I'm all ready for it. So just around the corner, come join us, have some fun with that. Burks is in the chat here, Rico's in the chat, Bogman's in the chat, Hastings, all First Pitch Arizona attendees last year. I know, pretty sure at least three of them are coming back. Bogman's waiting on the D-backs, seeing what their playoff run looks like, but the Giants are trying to ruin that right now as we speak. All right. Let's talk about one more thing. I mentioned it. It's the beginning of September. Let's do a listener league update, Ryan. Let's do a listener league update. Since the last time we talked, I've fallen a bit. I am 14th overall and 27th overall in my two leagues. But we'll start at the top. We have a new leader from the last time I've been checking. It's been moving around a lot up top here. There's about three teams that are really going for it here. Brandon Snyder is in the lead right now, followed by John Wilder. And Mark Crom and Snyder are in the same league, by the way, so that can't be fun. And Wilder's in one of my leagues, so he's been kicking my butt in that one for a while. But I have a feeling it's coming down to those three for the autographed jersey of their choice.
Certainly seems that way. I actually checked this Monday night because I just looked through all the overalls on Monday, because on the NFBC you can see before the first pitch on Monday, you can see the movement for the entire previous week. There was a dead tie between Brandon Snyder and John Wilder at the top of the Bubba in the Bloom overall standings. And again, for folks who have no idea what we're talking about, this is our group of four listener leagues that we did back in late February, early March, auction style. So the grand prize, something that's very generous that you thought up, which is an autographed jersey of the winner's choice?
Of an active player of the
active player
winner's choice. I said I prefer if it's someone on your winning roster, but you don't have to do that. You can pick as long as they're an active player. No retired Hall of Famers. That's when the stuff gets a little crazy. But if it's a current active player, it's of your choice. And there's also monetary prizes because each league costs $50 to get yep. into, so on and so forth. So you got those. There's four leagues, 15-team leagues. NFBC auction, the fun behind it all is most of us have never done an auction before, especially on the NFBC format. They kicked butt. Ryan's in two of the leagues. I'm in two of the leagues. So it's been fun. It's been a blast. Looking forward to seeing what we do next year. We'll do something along these lines. Don't know if it's the same format or what we'll do, but most likely something similar to this. But yeah, wanted to update that. A couple other notes here, like Hamley's in fourth. We got our buddy Brent Hershey in sixth. Nick Bullock's in fifth. Rounding out the top 10, Daniel Thibodeau, David Cray, Greg Sheeran, and Richard Zito. So a lot of and Ryan Ireland's 11th. Like a lot of big hitters from the NFBC world up top here. I'm trying to find somebody. Bloomfield. Oh, it's Roger Bloomfield is 28th. Sorry, it's Roger Bloomfield, your father.
I'll claim his team compared to mine.
There you are. You're right next to each other.
Yeah, my two Bloomfields are – I'm 36th and 37th overall out of 60.
You've made progress. Don't worry, man. You've made progress.
Trust me. it means nothing to nobody, but to me, if both of my auction teams could finish in the top half overall, top 30 out of 60, in terms of like an in-season grind and fab management thing, that would be like a hell of an accomplishment. I know we talked about a month or two into the season, one of my auction teams was like 58th out of 60, and I have clawed those two teams back up almost within striking distance of one of your teams. So watch out, my friend. Watch out.
I was telling Ben Tidd on Bench with Bubba that recorded earlier today that he said he's kind of given up on his overall main event, just trying to win his league now. And I said, you never know, man. Like I've just been trying to win one of my OCs, and I've been in the lead for a while. Hopefully it stays that way. I wasn't really planning on anything overall, but since like last Thursday, I was like 320th, 330th. As of today, I was 145. Like, I'm not saying I'm going to win the league, but my point is there's room to jump, weirdly enough. So keep trying. Maybe one of the top three we talked about when we talk later in September, maybe they're not there. You never know. Kevin Hastings made a funny comment here. I have 17 hitting points in my B&B leagues. When we do our season review of our teams, it's going to be really funny going back on my teams at least, because it's either I dominated hitting or dominated pitching. Not very many dominated both.
Separately, right. Yeah.
It's and I have a couple leagues. I think I have one league I have 9 hitting points in. 9. It's insane, especially in 15 teamers, to find that replacement value and get it done. So
I get it, Kevin. Hitting points, dude. That is
the lowest is five. I haven't checked recently, but it was 9. And no exaggeration, it was brutal, extremely brutal. Yeah. A lot of injuries on those leagues, and not aggressive enough in FAB apparently. So that's why we do reviews, to figure out how we can fix these problems, because it was brutal for sure. But any other thoughts on the Bubba and the Blue Invitational recap? It's a fun one, and I appreciate everybody being in this. It's been pretty sweet, and I know I've already heard from a couple people that looking forward to doing it again next year.
Yeah, we'll run it back next year, hopefully bigger, better, whatever. Shout out to the NFBC who hooked us up with these overall standings updates live, just like your main event, RotoWire Online Championship, all that stuff. So it's kind of cool to see our little corner of the fantasy world in that same drop down on the NFBC site as some of those big ones. But no, it's been a blast. Awesome way to connect to listeners, and there will be more. We will run it back next year, I'm sure, with probably some more bells and whistles attached to it as well. So I would say a rousing success despite the lack of star power on our squads.
It's all good. All right, let's talk about some news and notes since last time we talked. Not a ton of craziness. A lot of it was just like rosters expanding, guys getting called up and whatnot. There's a ton of guys rehabbing and could be returning within the week or within a week. I'll say that much. stay tuned to what's going on around that world, because we usually talk about the guys going to the IL and what to do with your teams. There's a lot returning here. Like Christian Walker came back on Tuesday night. Ketel Marte's back in a couple of days, so on and so forth. Xavier Edwards came back on Tuesday, back to leadoff role. Connor Norby slid into second, which is good for both. That's fun. So little things like that. But we'll start with Ramon Urias of the Baltimore Orioles was actually very fantasy relevant at the time. One of the better hitters on the team for a couple of weeks, especially in deeper formats. He hits the IL. Kobe Mayo, I put the wrong name there, got recalled. He's not even playing every day, which is hilarious. And Jordan Westberg was seen throwing on the field Tuesday without a cast. So how do you assess this situation?
I mean, just more errors up for my eighth round pick, Jordan Westberg, in the 2020.
That's the only reason I put that on the outline. That's the whole reason I put that there.
It is funny that you have Connor Norby in the rundown, even though it's Kobe Mayo, because that is the newest pair of players that for a while, I'm sure I will get screwed up. I know they used to be on the same team, now no longer. Fantasy-wise, like, yeah, Ramon Urias wasn't that great, but was getting hot at the right time and starting to do some things. So bad timing for him. It's just Orioles being Orioles with Kobe Mayo. One start in three games. It sure looks like, to me, it's a platoon between Mayo and Emmanuel Rivera at third base right now for Baltimore. And that's something we want to stay away from in terms of any kind of pickup. So, no, I'm not really going out of my way to grab Kobe Mayo. The playing time does not seem like it's going to be there.
Bingo. More Orioles news. This one's not great. Ryan Mountcastle, he's been out with a wrist injury, a sprained wrist. It's still so bad he's not swinging a bat yet. There's no timetable for his return. So the age-old question, Ryan, are you dropping Ryan Mountcastle?
I think I hopefully would have dropped him a while ago. Okay. So, I mean, even in 15 teamers, like, you're dropping him.
John Gray, Texas Rangers, toe injury, hits the IL, out for the season. You can drop him. So do that accordingly. And Tyler Molly was also officially put out for the rest of the season. He was already on the IL, though. What this does, I'm just going to clarify, Jack Leiter got the start recently. He's scheduled again this weekend. Jacob deGrom was scheduled for another rehab start this Saturday, but he's trying to talk his way into starting for the Rangers on Saturday, so stay tuned for that. And Max Scherzer is making a rehab start on Friday, and he's hoping only one rehab start. So a lot of what-ifs, a lot to stay tuned with, but Jack Leiter will be around for at least one more start, most likely. Something to think about, though, with John. And it locks in, I think, Cody Bradford for the rest
that's
of the year.
That's the one. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the name I was waiting for you to say, because I don't think Jack Leiter.
He's been great at AAA, can't get it done in the bigs. Just right. Can't figure
like,
it out.
Like, I think from a fantasy, I don't know, Cody Bradford's probably universally rostered or somewhat close. And 12-teamers, the only kind of hesitation I had recommending, both of us real had recommending Bradford, was we didn't know if he'd stick in the Texas rotation. I think that's a given at this point. So Cody Bradford, the rest of the way, skills were great before his injury, missed a big chunk of time in the middle of the year and has not skipped a beat since returning. So I think this is best possible news for Cody Bradford as opposed to anyone else.
Yeah, Bradford 92% in OCs. So
yeah,
it's just funny because when we reported on Bradford a while back, started the season great, hits the IL. They said even before he came off the IL, he's going straight to the bullpen. They just want to make sure he stays healthy for the whole year. All the injuries take place in Texas, and he's been strictly back to the rotation and been awesome. So pretty interesting stuff in that regard. Last bit of news I have here, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. hits the IL with a calf strain retroactive to the second on Monday. Christian Walker was activated to take his spot on the roster, but that's obviously not in the outfield. Randall Grichuk got the start, hit two home runs on Monday night. Looks like he might be the everyday guy right now in the outfield because of the other options for the D-backs outfield. Thoughts on this one? Because Gurriel, they're hoping it's a minimal stint, but that's hoping, and that makes it quite interesting.
Yeah, and Gurriel, you're certainly getting close. You're getting that itchy finger on the drop because you said it was retroactive to the second
yesterday.
So, oh, yeah. Or at least he comes back, whatever is the 12th, and you've got a couple weeks. So maybe take Arizona at their word and hold on to Gurriel if you can. The Randall Grichuk thing is interesting. I was actually thinking to myself, I have Josh Bell in a few 15 teamers, and was wondering if he was becoming a drop because Christian Walker was coming back. But the Gurriel injury, I think even it's just one less obstacle where Josh Bell could probably DH and or switch off at first base most days. So I think Josh Bell gets some longer leash.
Walker will play first base. He's a gold glover, so he's not leaving for Bell. What the D-backs said, like over the weekend or late last week, when Walker returns, Bell will play every day versus left-handed pitching. Kyle Harrison started on Tuesday, so we'll see what happens with the righty on the mound. That'll be the telltale sign. But Bell will at least get the lefty at-bats, maybe more. So that's where it does get tricky, though, if we see by the end of this week that it is strictly a lefty-righty thing for Bell. At this point in the season, that's where it's real tough. That's where it's tough, unless it's like a 4 or 5 lefty week. Unless he's facing the Nationals and the Cubs in the same week, it's going to be pretty tricky. So,
and I think, we'll of course cover this on Thursday night, right? But if Randall Grichuk does get regular playing time against right-handed pitching, he quickly becomes a pretty good streamer. Not a lead or anything like that, but I think he's a sneaky good pickup in a great lineup if Randall Grichuk plays every day.
Yeah, I saw his stat line as I'm watching the game, of course. He had the 2 home runs tonight already. He's hitting close to 290 on the season. And obviously most of that's versus left-handed pitching. So if he can sneak in some more at-bats, that becomes quite interesting. And Beanable also mentioned this. I didn't put it on the outline, but the Rangers have said they're going to limit Seager's innings, manage his workload as he's not 100% the rest of the season. Not a whole lot you can do with that for fantasy because you're going to start him even if he's playing 80% of the time. But just know it's not an everyday role for Corey Seager anymore.
Load management. We have been infected
NBA.
By the NBA. It just makes the Texas Rangers lineup. So as you were saying, I was looking how have they been lately? Third worst lineup in baseball over the last month. Just makes Texas that much more streamable against if Corey Seager is not playing, of course. So an already bad lineup could get a lot worse.
Yep, could get a lot worse. So stay tuned for that. We'll have you covered on more news and notes and stuff to get you ready for Fab on Thursday night as usual. But for now, we head to Bloom Board season. It's Tuesday night, Ryan. So what do you have up your sleeve for us here on a nice September evening?
Jumped the gun a little bit on our production there, on our transitions. My apologies. Figured we'd have it dialed in at this point.
No, never. That's not our style.
All right. So what this is we have talked about the three types of strikes before in previous shows, maybe even a couple times. So what I wanted to do is do a little check-in on the top and bottom in terms of raw pitching skills based on these three types of strikes and look at those skills versus ERA since the All-Star break. So that's what we're looking at tonight. I got the top 10, the bottom 10, what these three types of strikes are we reference these on the show all the time. The king, the best strike possible from a skills standpoint is a whiff, right? A swinging strike. So your league average on that is like 11.5%. And then kind of your next best strike is a called or a swinging strike, right? Like a strike that's not a foul ball. CSW, that is an Alex Fast / Nick Pollock creation, which anyone who watched the Orioles game today, Alex Fast was in the booth, which was just really freaking cool to see someone from like fantasy baseball be on a actual broadcast of a major league team. He did a fantastic job. But those guys over there at Pitcherless kind of invented the CSW stat. League average is 28.5% on that. And then the one I talk about all the time is just ball percentage. So your ability to not throw balls. Your league average on that is 36%. The lower, the better on that. So I take these three types of strikes. I weight them a little bit. So like swing strikes the best, then CSW, then ball rate. Throw them all together, rank them, and that's what we've got. We got our top 10, our bottom 10. And it's interesting with some of these guys, what the surface ERA is since the All-Star break for both the top and the bottom.
Yep, most definitely. And, you got the usual suspect up top. Blake Snow has been pretty much the best pitcher in baseball since the All-Star break. That's like him and Skubal, I would say. But he's looking by this stat line better than Skubal.
Skubal's on here too, by the way.
So better than Skubal, 1.61 ERA. Over his 8 starts since the All-Star break, dude has allowed 22 hits in 50 innings, 72 strikeouts, 20 walks, for a wonderful 27.5% K to walk for Mr. Blake Snell. I don't have a ton on him. The swinging strike's great. CSW is elite. They're all elite. So the ball percentage is still high, but that's Blake Snell's, you know, MO. So when you see Blake Snell's line, this could be simple, but what do you have on him?
That's actually the thing that sticks out to me is the ball percentage. It is, since the All-Star break, has been better than league average, 34.9. Again, league average is like 36%. That could just be some variance, whatever. Maybe he goes back to being Blake Snell. But that's been the big thing for Snell, is basically holding, being this dominant while holding a league average walk rate. If Blake Snell can hold a league average walk rate, again, supported by that underlying ball percentage, like, dude, it could be scary. Again, I don't think he does in the long term. But since the All-Star break, Blake Snell has been a league average walk rate, and then you combine that with just the absurd amounts of whiffs and good quality strikes that he gets. It's, you know, no surprise that second half Snell is second half Snelling.
Yep, second half Snelling is correct. Another guy that's been amazing is Spencer Schwellenbach, and I've said it many times. I took the L because I was anti Schwelly to start his campaign in the bigs because he was a big pitched contact guy in the minors. Well, he made adjustments, folks, and that gives you a 17.6% swinging strike rate on his 8 starts since the break, almost a 32.5% CSW. Dude's been amazing. He was picked in the first 11 rounds of round 10 in our two early DC. What's your thoughts on Schwellenbach, who just continues to kind of, if there are any naysayers left, keeps telling them to like shush, basically. He gives them the Mutombo on the way out.
Yeah, I don't know. Naysayer-wise, I don't know what the naysayer thing is. I mean, maybe it is like a lack of track. The only thing you could say is lack of track record, but like that's outside of Spencer Schwellenbach's control. Like, he's only 24 years old. He's only been on this planet that long. I agree with you, though. Like, I one of the things I missed out, and I missed out on Schwellenbach this year, and probably one of the best fab pickups of the fantasy baseball season, was that low K rate. Last year in A-ball, Spencer Schwellenbach had a 20% K rate as a 23-year-old in A-ball. Like, not very impressive, but has completely turned the corner and improved just leaps and bounds over what we saw last year. The big thing that I like with Schwellenbach, this isn't like a smoke and mirrors or like one true elite pitch that major league hitters are eventually going to figure out. It's a pretty well-rounded arsenal. Schwellenbach throws four pitches 15% of the time or more. He's got a slider and curveball that both miss a ton of bats. And then he's got two fastballs, four seamer and a cutter that he consistently throws for strikes. So those are his command pitches. He's got two secondaries that miss bats. That well-rounded arsenal for me, I think, gives Schwellenbach like a good amount of staying power. And I agree. When I saw he got taken, I think it was the 10th round, like you said, in the 2025 draft, I kind of nodded my head and was like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Yep, makes sense. And honestly, might go higher if he keeps doing what he's doing right now. That's the crazy part about it with Schwelly. And so it's been pretty darn impressive for the kid. As we go down the list here, you got, you know, I'm going to skip Crochet unless you want to talk Crochet, since he's throwing 3 to 4 innings a start. It just seems like it's a, you know, the ERA is still very high. He got blown up on like one of those outings or something, and that'll happen on short innings. But he's still, while he's out there, still blowing people away.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me. And again, in terms of next year, is Garrett Crochet. I know we had the work. We are in the middle of workload management. It's a very encouraging sign to see Crochet still be one of the best pitchers in baseball into the second half, because you always wonder how that arm's going to hold up coming from that transition from the bullpen to the rotation. And he has answered that quite well and only getting better kind of as the season goes along, which is kind of crazy.
Yep. Pretty wild stuff there. Who has not been wild. He's been insanely effective this year is Chris Sale with his 2.27 ERA. 15% swinging strike rate. I would have guessed higher, but that's still very good. Don't get me wrong. But the CSW is awesome. The ball percentage is great. And it seems like I was looking at his just month-to-month stats in general while you were talking, and he's basically been the same dude every year, if not better, as the season's gone on. Like his strikeout rate, it's the second highest month of the year in August. He just continues to get better and better. So what's your thoughts on the old Chris Sale, who isn't breaking down like many thought he would?
No, and actually the velocity is up a full tick. In April and May, it was 94.5. July, August, it's 95.5. So breaking down Chris Sale is not the both from a velocity standpoint and a true skill standpoint. And what I was saying with Crochet also kind of applies to Sale. It's like, what is that second half going to look like after throwing not very many innings the past few years? Chris Sale has been able to manage this bump in workload with ease. And I think, again, that only bolsters his 2025 outlook.
No doubt about it. Now we get to some of the fun ones. Like, those guys are the captain obvious. Like, these guys have been great all season. Spencer, Mr. Spaghetti Arrighetti, has been pretty, pretty, pretty good since the All-Star break. One of the best pitchers in baseball. Yeah, there was a point in the year where he was getting dropped everywhere, getting added back, getting dropped. I remember we had a discussion on the show one time where I think I was recommending him for a fab week, and you're like, nah, I'll leave that alone. And couldn't fault you on that because he's been that bad. But it's turning out to be pretty good in the end here. 16% swinging strike rate since the break, 33.4% CSW, 33, almost 34% ball rate. And then I was just looking again at his month-to-month. In the month of August, 38.2% strikeout rate for a 30.1% K to walk in the month of August. For those that don't know, since the All-Star break, it's usually July 19th. So he made like probably two starts in July, probably six starts in August. Dude's had a 1.68 batting average against with a 0.9 whip in August. Spencer Arrighetti has been unconscious. Honestly, probably second best to Blake Snell on this list so far in the month of August alone. But since the break, he's fifth.
And just unreal. And one of the first of this crew not drafted in our first 11 rounds. I wonder how That's long,
crazy.
Especially if Arrighetti closes this thing out in September and pitches well with a strong September. I would think he is one of the top starting pitchers to get taken in round 12. The big thing for me with Arrighetti, there's not really like a pitch mix change or anything from first to second half. The reason I was off of him early was just the lack of control. He pretty much walked like three guys on average every outing, and the strikeout stuff was not what it is now. And to see Arrighetti ramp up the missed bats, the CSW, while also at the same time improving his control markedly over his last few starts. Like, I need to take a deeper dive and figure out people maybe smarter than us. Take that deeper dive, and from like an arsenal standpoint, did he change arm slots or different types of pitches or whatever? Because the usage looks pretty consistent. What changed from an arsenal standpoint with Arrighetti to make this work? Because the skills, I mean, it just rave reviews. This guy has been a top 10 pitcher in baseball since the All-Star break. And again, just like Schwellenbach, someone you could have very easily gotten off of Fab.
Yeah, it's fun because now you got an Astros. Well, not everybody's Astros fans out there, so I'm just going to throw that out there. But you got Hunter Brown, you got Spencer Arrighetti, two homegrown dudes, or at least young guys. They might not have been drafted. I apologize. But they'll easily replace some of these guys that they've got in place so they can pay the hitters like Yordan and company and to stay good for a while. So a non-fantasy angle there, but you see these good teams continue to do good things, and that's why they are competitive, unlike the White Sox. Next on this
list.
Ouch. Anytime you get a White Sox rant.
Yeah, they got Crochet on the list here. Come on, don't hate. By the way, I did stream the hell out of Cade Bovich today, and that was beautiful against the White Sox.
He was outstanding. I hope Albert Suarez does the same thing tomorrow because I picked up a lot of Suarez. So,
God, it was
like awesome. I saw the Povich start. That was outstanding. That was beautiful stuff.
10 Ks shutout, 6-8.
Made it look easy.
7-3. Yeah.
God, they're so bad right now. So bad.
Yes.
Michael King. This is a very interesting one. 2.04 ERA since the break. 15.5% swinging strike. 35.4% CSW is outstanding. But a 35.3% ball percentage. And I was looking, you know, as the season has gone on here, in August, he has his second worst walk rate, over 10% walk rate. So like an 18% K to walk, batting average up to 250 against second worst, whip of 1.44, BABIP's through the roof. So he's got maybe BABIP to depth. But August has been one of his worst months, yet still has the 2.04 ERA, which I guess could be a compliment to his overall skill set. I don't know, but what's your thoughts on Michael King, who we also many thought, how many innings he's got? 150 innings. We are all concerned about that as well.
That's the thing. I kind of hate to sound like a broken record here, but that was The concern with King is, what does a second half Michael King look like, right? This was a guy in the rotation last year who moved, or sorry, in the bullpen last year who moved to the rotation at the end of the year and looked really good with the Yankees. But it was like, can he do this over the entire season? And again, similar to a lot of the guys we've talked about already, not only are the skills better, but Michael King is also throwing harder. Was down like around 93 in April and May, up 94 in terms of fastball velocity in the second half of the season. The changeup for Michael King has just been massive. It was his best pitch last year. It's his best pitch this year. It's actually slower than it was last year, which creates that separation in terms of perception from the fastball and velocity. So that has turned out really good. And obviously Michael King is showing the ability to handle a starting pitcher workload. We'll see how September kind of turns out, but he was drafted, I want to say, in like the sixth round of our 2025 draft, which sounds a little early, but not when you see a skill improvement like this. Michael King looks really good right now.
And this is something we'll definitely talk about in the off season, but one of my biggest concerns, and maybe it's just me being too cautious, which we've said many times on the show, we usually both are kind of cautious with these things. These guys who take these huge innings jumps, I get worried about next season. Like, look at Jesus Lozardo, for instance. That's where there's a lot of these guys like Michael King that took the jumps, and I'm really curious to see where that lands, all things considered, next year, but that's a whole other conversation for another day. Mm-hmm. Speaking of innings jumps, Tarik Skubal, 2.75 ERA in the second half here, near 50% swinging strike, 32.5% CSW, 31.4% ball rate. Dude's pretty great. I don't have a whole lot to say about Tarik Skubal, but if you have any goodies, you're welcome to throw them out.
He's a beast. That's all I got.
Yeah, he's pretty darn awesome. Now, this next one, this Bloom board sums up my weekly roster lock conundrum with the one and only Sonny Gray. Like, I love the value I got on him. When he first started the year, looked like I was the smartest man alive. Like usual, I'm not the smartest man alive, so this came back to hit me in the face. But since the All-Star break, Sonny Gray, 5.25 ERA. But let me just preface something here. He also has a 3.18 Sierra over that time frame. So that's something to maybe keep in the back pocket when we're going to bury him here in a minute. When you look at, he's got 11.4%, almost a 30% home run to fly ball since the break. That's not ideal either. Back to your board, though. 33% CSW, 33.5% ball rate, and that is correlated to other fantasy goodness, as he has a 23.2% K to walk over this period. So this is my conundrum, Ryan. The ratio, garbage. Strikeouts and everything else, peripheral stuff, looks great with Sonny Gray. What do you see when you see Sonny Gray? Because he's good enough to make this list, even with an ERA over 5.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of this list, is right? Like, I do not care about it. This is the Pablo Lopez argument that I made in the first half when the ERA was just through the roof. Everything else looked really good. I don't care. Like, yes, ERA is the category, and it's, I'm sure, been frustrating as hell for Sonny Gray in the second half with that 5.25 ERA since the All-Star break. But I'm here to tell you that Sonny Gray is like pitching extremely well right now. Yes, like these are some of the best skills that you'll see. And so, yes, while it's frustrating, like you're missing, trust me, Pablo Lopez guy here, you're missing out on, like, you feel like you should earn these stats, these category stats, because your pitcher is pitching so well. I just think Sonny Gray's in for a really strong finish because he's pitching so well beneath the surface. 9 times out of 10 over the long haul, these skills win out over a surface ERA. So I don't know what's causing the ERA drop. Maybe I homer to fly ball or a low strand rate, left on base rate, whatever you want to call that. But whatever. Sonny Gray is pitching extremely well right now. And you just kind of have to throw him out there every week, and you just kind of have to hope that at some point this turns around on the surface, because the skills say it will.
Yep, we're running out of time to turn it around, though. But yes, I agree.
Yes, we are.
No, I agree. It's one of those where I understand your Pablo Lopez paid now, because every week I'm like, I can't bench him. Like, I can't go. Like, had half his games against these NL Central teams. Like, the Cubs are hitting great over the last month, so that kind of changed the narrative there. But he's had pretty good matchups, too, which is pretty frustrating.
And Michael in the chat says, yeah, it has been. It's just been the home runs. 2.5 homers per 9 in the second half. Like, that is...
That'll do it.
That is awful, but also not going to hold for very long. So, again, you only got a month left or whatever, like 3 weeks at this point, a little over 3.5 weeks. But so wait it out is not the right word, but just keep throwing power Sonny Gray out there. Power on. Power through. Just cope how you want to cope. That's your personal decision. And
grab some noons and go for the ride.
You say it more bluntly than I do. I like it.
Yeah, it's the story of our team here, Bloom. I'm always just straight to the point on it. Sometime for the negative.
Bubba recommends drinking 6 noons before the next Sonny Gray start and just let it ride. You heard it here.
I had 4 noons on the hour and a half train ride before the game on Sunday. So it's doable. It's doable, folks. Robbie Ray, I'm going to take my homer hat off here. So I'll let you have most of the floor on this one. 4.7 ERA, swinging strikes great, 17.6 is outstanding. 31.5% CSW, 37.1% ball rate does not surprise me one iota in this situation. Robbie Ray has either looked like he's striking on everybody or it's walks and tanks all over the place. Like it's almost a Jekyll and Hyde. You get one or two, you get either or per start. Now he's on the IL, obviously. What do you have, though? Because I've watched pretty much every start, so this chart makes 100% sense to me.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Yeah, like great stuff at times, ton of missed bats. I mean, like a near 18% swing strike is some of the best whiff rates you'll see in baseball. But this is Robbie Ray. For Robbie Ray to even make this list with a worse than average ball rate is actually pretty impressive. It speaks to how dominant the stuff has been and can be. And that's really my takeaway is like this dude's going to be a wild card next year, not only from a like massive strikeout ceiling potential, but also like whip killing potential. You also now have the innings pitched question kind of layered on top now that Robbie Ray is he out for the year with a hamstring?
Is it close? They're trying to bring him back for another start. I think they want to get some more innings for next year, basically.
So it's just a lot of uncertainty with Robbie Ray. Would not surprise me at all if Robbie Ray led the majors in strikeouts next year. It's the stuff is there. He needs to stay healthy and do it. It may come with some walks like Blake Snell style, but that's who Robbie Ray is. And again, I know from our 2025 recap episode, it is worth pointing out that the legend Steve Weimer, the silent assassin, took Sonny Gray and Robbie Ray back to back at the turn. I think it was 6-7 turn. So I
thought it was Carlos Rodon and Robbie Ray.
No, it was Ray and Gray. Gray and Ray. He said it at the same time. Yeah,
even better. Rhymed. We'll wrap up the good side of the board here with one of the best draft picks of the two early draft. Just an outstanding pick that was ridiculed at times, or at least people gasped when this pick was made. And no, people, I am being nice for once. This was not my pick. This was Ryan's pick. You say Kikuchi. You say we all say Kikuchi. And he's been outstanding, especially once he joined the Astros. Has been really good. 3.83 ERA in the second half since the All-Star break. He's got 3.03 Sierra over that stretch. Near 16% swinging strike rate, 32% CSW, 34.5% ball rate, near 25% K to walk. Dude's been electric. So what do you have on Kikuchi? What's improved besides going to a new team?
You know, just got ridiculed, man, for this 11th round pick. And you say Kikuchi from some of our most loyal listeners. I won't name names. You all know who you are out there. And yes, I'm victory lapping a 2025 pick while we're still in September of 2024. So that usually doesn't turn out to be a good thing. The biggest thing with Kikuchi is so like with these boards, I can pick July 1st, August 1st, June 1st, arbitrary endpoints. With Kikuchi, this endpoint like kind of makes sense because most of this time has been with Houston, and it's also been a time where Houston has pretty much switched up Kikuchi's pitch mix, throwing a ton more, I want to say, curveballs. Hold on. It's loading. A ton more sliders. He's faded the curveball. It's one of those two. Ton more sliders, fewer curveballs. It's just a tangible change in approach that has led to a massive jump in skills for Yusei Kikuchi. And I think with the slider over the curve, you can just command it better, throw it for strikes when you need to. I think we're seeing that with the improved ball rate from Yusei Kikuchi. I have no idea where he's going to sign next year. My hope is just that by moving to Houston, by getting out of Toronto and moving to Houston, Houston saw what, you know, they see in Kikuchi and kind of unlock this pitch mix that I think Kikuchi can kind of use and go forward wherever he signs. So I think this huge jump in skills corresponding with a new team, a new pitch mix, is certainly noteworthy. I'm not going to go out there. We've all been burned by Kikuchi in the past, but I think this could be a legit SP2, SP3 next season, and I think is pretty reliable from at least from a volume standpoint. The quality of that volume may vary, but yeah.
I'd love to see him come to San Francisco and take Blake Snell's spot, because Snell's not coming back. So I'd take that trade off right now if someone offered it to me in a heartbeat. Because you can have Ray and Kikuchi at the top of the rotation with Logan Webb. Whew, I'll take my chances. Let's go. All right, let's go to the negative side of things here. The not so good since the All-Star break. Let's just start with Kevin Gausman. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. I've kind of beat this one to death, it feels like, on this show. But 3.23 ERA has been great, but there's no strikeouts, and that's supported by a 10.5% swinging strike rate, 25.3% CSW, and a near 36% ball rate. Kevin Gausman used to be one of the biggest swinging strike CSW K to walk guys on the planet for a couple of years. The splitter was just fooling everybody. It's doing nothing anymore. And he's basically a pitcher right now that's just hoping to get through six. And sometimes he does great because he has faced the Angels. Other times he's just praying for five or six. I'll let you have the floor here, but I am baffled. I just don't know if the splitter sucks this year completely. Like, he has no control over it at all or what's going on, but he is not the Kevin Gausman we've known for a few seasons.
He's not. And that was kind of one of the funnier reactions from really our draft room in the 2025 draft, is I think everyone was wanting to take, or at least a good portion of that room was wanting to take Kevin Gausman while the 11 rounds were ending. But I think we all kind of looked at the same thing and said, even though the ERA has been good for Gausman since the All-Star break, it's this has fallen apart in 2024, and it's not getting better as the season goes along. So the velocities on the fastball is down a full tick, which you mentioned the split finger. I mean, that has a big effect on the split finger. I mean, that is his pitch. He throws the four seam in the split finger 85% of the time. So he's basically a two pitch guy. And once that starts losing effectiveness at an age, I mean, Kevin Gausman's going to be 34 next year. Had some shoulder issues before the season. That's why the draft price kind of dipped a little bit. It's just yes, this could turn around. Could go back to being Gausman next season. But I don't know. None of us took Gausman in the first 11 picks. And I don't think any of us really regretted it in the 2025 draft.
And I know a bunch of us all said we took turns looking at his page throughout the draft. They were nope, not doing it.
Can't it was ugly. It, so. Yep. So
eventually there'll be a point where he's worth it at a DC, because at worst he's pitching every time. Like, he's not missing starts, but it's just, are they worth it? He's got to fall. I'm not going to say anymore, because I'm going to make myself feel even worse about what Cosman's doing, but we'll see. Michael C says, he did have a shoulder kind of rush back, maybe never right. I'm wondering if that explains Bednar too. Very possible.
Could be possible.
But, I hope that's what it is. Then he can rest and be a great value next year. Michael Lorenzen, I don't have a ton there. I know we hit on him recently. Do you have nothing on Lorenzen?
No, I mean, 3.18 ERA is a mirage.
It is.
The All-Star break.
I want to hit on Albert Suarez, though, because I know you've liked him a few different times during Fab on proper matchups. So that's fair. We liked him against the White Sox tomorrow on Wednesday, by the same day you're listening to this, Wednesday. He has a 3.72 ERA since the breaks, but a 12.2% swinging strike, a 23.6% CSW. Oof. And a 38% walk rate. It's brutal. He's at 12.5% K to walk since the All-Star break. This is why I've never been able to buy into him. I love his matchup this week and the following week. He's got a good remaining schedule. He's got 1 week you'd sit him. You pretty much want to start Suarez most of the rest of the year, but he's just not giving me the most confidence, I should say. So what do you see when you look at Albert Suarez?
Who the hell does he pitch against? So it's the White Sox on Wednesday. Then it's at Boston.
Yeah, next week you don't want him, but then I'll pull up the schedule. You do your thing and I'll
I got it. And then it's your Giants at Detroit two-step. Yes. Again. Who knows?
Start
and
that.
then finishes at Minnesota. And really if kudos if you're still in races and whatever for 2024, this is that time to kind of pull up. You can do it on the RotoWire grid, pull up the 28-day view. You can start mapping out each of these guys. Opponents the rest of the way. And I think Suarez is one of those guys, because I think he is streamable in the right matchup, but very much blow upable in the wrong matchup. So watch him get destroyed by the White Sox or whatever tomorrow. But I think that's a slam dunk stream. But outside of that, maybe a two step that San Francisco and Detroit week. But I'd probably cut him after that. The skills do not look good for Albert Suarez.
Yeah, but I like that. That two step is pretty.
Yep.
Pretty nice, I think. So I'd take my chances on that one. All right, let's go to the next one on the docket here. Jose Soriano, his ERA, like every time I look at him to drop, his ERA is great. He's striking guys out. But then I look at this now, a 10.5% swinging strike, 25.5% CSW, and a near 39% ball rate. That makes me think, yes, this is why you thought about dropping him for weeks, Bubba. So when you see Jose Soriano, what are you up to? Because this ERA is pretty, pretty nice.
It is. It does look like he's on the IL, though.
He is for now, yes. He's supposed to be coming back within a week.
Speaking of which,
Reed Detmers shut down the Dodgers with 10 Ks tonight. Just throwing that out there for anybody curious.
That was a good call. That was crazy. And yes, he did. Yes, he did. Didn't get the win, but kill the win. So, yep. Who's this? Jose Soriano. Jose Soriano. Dude, no, he's not good, man. Like, he doesn't really miss bats. He doesn't really throw strikes. You've got a 3.42 ERA on the season for Jose Soriano. In the second half, that is 3.32. Like, it's just this guy has been living on some pretty decent. Where's his homer to fly? No, homer to fly is pretty normal. How the hell is he doing this?
That's
no, I see it. It's the one thing this board doesn't look at. It's a ground ball rate. 60% ground ball rate for Jose Soriano. So that this is kind of an example, like, no, he's not this good. But an extreme ground ball rate like this can kind of patch things together from an ERA standpoint. I still think your whip kind of blows. So I don't know. Jose Soriano for me, if he's even healthy, is like right there with Albert Suarez, in my opinion. But an extreme ground ball rate like this can hold things together when the strikeouts and walks aren't there. We've kind of seen that with Framber Valdez a little bit this year.
Yep. No, I'm with you there. It's just a very tilting profile. Tobias Myers is another one that's similar to the Soriano realm here. It's got the low ERA. He's put together, you know, solid runs since the All-Star break here, going at least five most starts. It's been 3 runs or less in all 8 starts for Tobias Myers. But you look at the overall skill set here, 8.9% swinging strike. That's really bad. 24% CSW. Not a lot of balls, though. 34% balls. That's just a profile. It looks like he's going to get hammered at any moment, but he's avoided it so far. He's, I guess, let me check one more thing here. He has 37% ground ball rate. Ain't going to cut it either. So what are you seeing here with Tobias Myers?
Just a lot of pitching to contact, like a Kyle Hendricks type, where if the command goes at all, you can get destroyed. And a 9% swinging strike is really bad. You're just not missing many bats. So even when Tobias Myers pitches well, the K's aren't really going to be there. So the whip will be nice, and that is a category, but I can't have this much pitch to contact. And then you look at Tobias Myers' last few starts here. He gets Colorado this week, so that's good. Road Rockies. But then it's at Diamondbacks versus Phillies the next 2 weeks, and then at Pittsburgh versus the Mets that last week. So very, I think, tough schedule if you don't already have Tobias Myers for this week. I don't think you can start him the next 2 weeks, and so I think you drop him or don't pick him up.
Speaking of profiles, a very similar profile belongs to Aaron Civale. Thoughts?
Yeah. Damn, man. Just dagger to the heart. Civale. You mispronounced him again.
Not with that kind of profile. That's a whole lot of red for Cy Volley.
Yeah, it is. He hasn't been his normal Cy self this year. To state the obvious. Has he ever really been a Cy?
Thank you. You beat me to that one. Yes.
He was a Cy last year after he got traded to Tampa Bay, which was a
couple months in Tampa. Yes.
Yeah, which got me excited for this year, and it just did not happen. The other important thing with Aaron Savali. So this is kind of the flip side of the Yusei Kikuchi thing. Also had a change of scenery going to Milwaukee. And I thought maybe my last thread of hope that Milwaukee, who is a pretty decent pitching organization, could turn this thing around. And looking at Saivali's stats since the All-Star break, say they Milwaukee Brewers have failed in that endeavor.
Yeah, I'd say so. And like, we had the stat that he's been really good at home, but not on the road since he joined the Brewers. So he's got that going for him. But he wasn't even horrible today. Like, he survived, so that was good. You got that going for
like
you.
Like, he didn't die on the mound. It's good.
Didn't get destroyed, so that's good. Got that going for him. But yeah, not the guy we expected. Edward Cabrera, if I've ever seen a profile on this Bloom board that
Hold up.
What?
Saivali had 7 Ks, no walks today, my friend. He's back.
How many runs did he allow?
No, just 3. Not bad.
How many innings pitched?
No, just 5. Not bad.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Cy Young pitcher going 5 innings. That's not even a quality start.
All right, continue. I should not have.
If I've ever seen a profile on a Bloom board that resembles what pops into my head immediately, it's Edward Cabrera's. The ERA, 3.6, because when he's good, he's really good. But when he's bad, he has a 40% ball rate, which makes more sense than anything on the planet. I am surprised, though, it's only a 10.4% swing and strike and a 25.9% CSW, because, like, again, when he's on, he's making, usually makes guys, you know, miss a lot. Now, he missed a lot of time this year via injury, so this might be a smaller sample for the second half for Edward Cabrera. But that ball rate stands out like a sore thumb, and that has always been Edward Cabrera's problem.
Yep, that's your infamous rare steak red on this board. This is the reddest cell on the entire thing, and that it makes sense. Edward Cabrera control is not his finest suit, and a 40% ball rate is like truly, truly awful. The bad thing with Edward Cabrera is like you thought maybe. If you've got your Edward Cabrera painted glasses, I don't know what those look like, but you knew the walks were going to be there, but you kind of were hoping that the whiffs and the Ks would be as well. And for Edward Cabrera to not be able to hit water from the boat and also have a below average swinging strike in the second half, it's really bad. So like you said, Bubba, the injuries, maybe I take a chance on a late Edward Cabrera next season, just because I do think the talent is there somewhere, but it has not shown this year at all.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy with him because the talent is there. But gosh, when's it ever going to come to fruition? Luis L. Ortiz, once a popular fab target by many, including myself. And then we realized it's Luis L. Ortiz, and we should probably stop doing this. 3.7 ERA, 8.2% swinging strike with a 26% CSW and a 37% ball rate. And one thing that really stands out is at 3.68 ERA, that's fine and dandy with a 5.19 Sierra. But I look at 31 Ks and 46 in the third innings. That is never a profile I want to look at when it comes to fantasy baseball.
No, especially with shaky control. So, 3.69 ERA is good, but it's not supported by any of this. And actually, I did not mention this at the top. But this board I only took for these bad guys in all red. In terms of quality of strikes, I only took guys under a 4 ERA in the second half because there are guys who just like suck and then their ERA sucks. Doesn't really make for the best type of discussion. So I chopped out anyone who had a north of a 4 ERA since the All-Star break just to kind of look at guys who on the surface might be pitching well in the second half, but the skills are not there. And Luis L. Ortiz certainly is that. It actually turned out better if you fabbed the wrong Luis Ortiz. In fab this year, he would not have hurt you as much as Luis L.
Man, now I really want to see the other ones you chopped off and the ERAs that came with it, because that'd make a lot more sense than these guys. But that's the point of the exercise, of course. Smart man you are. Andre Pallante. This is a dude that I have not bought into one time. Like, I'm like, how is he still in the rotation? And I'm like, no offense to Pallante. He's a big league pitcher. I'm a schlub talking on a podcast. But like, when I see the options in baseball, I just never understood the profile. He's made 8 starts since the All-Star break, Ryan. And he's got the 9.5% swinging strike, 23% CSW, near 40% ball rate. I look at his 8 starts. 2 of them, he's allowed 5 runs. So 6 outings, 3 in runs or less. That's good. Dude has allowed 21 walks with 30 Ks in 46 innings pitched. That is just a beyond dreadful profile when I look at anything. Like, that's worse than Luis L. Ortiz, honestly. So, what do you see with Andre Pallante? Because, man, I wish I could see Matt Thompson's face when he sees this board.
Yeah, his face may be as red as Pallante's skills here in the second half. Would you start, so this is how bad it is in terms of, like, rosters. Pallante gets a two-step next week at home against the Reds, at home against the Pirates. You rolling with that in a 15?
No, because if I'm two-stepping a guy, I want counting stats.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing. Is like, if he gets destroyed in one of two starts, at least give me the counting stats type thing. He ain't gonna get you anything. Literally, in his eight starts since the break, this is what's even. I just gave the 30 Ks total. He has 5 Ks in 3 of them. The rest are all less than, that's 4 fewer Ks in 5 starts. That is, like, that is not going to help you in the categories you need to try to win a Roto league.
Agreed. No Pallante here.
No Pallante. It's more like Picante, folks. The opposite, though. The last but not least, I'll save the nickname.
That was a stretch, man. That was bad.
I should probably stretch more often. I'll save the nickname for you on this one. But Javier Assad of the Chicago Cubs with a 3.10 ERA has a whopping, I had to double check and zoom in here, 6.4% swinging strike rate, 25% CSW, and a 38.5% ball rate. That is all not good. And this is a guy that I had a ton of shares of last year, and you made fun of me then, which was fine. And I don't have as many this year, weirdly enough, but the profile is the same. The skill set has not changed. But the dude, 3 earned runs or less in all 8 starts since the break, but just 27 Ks in 40 innings pitched. He has 7 Ks against the Detroit Tigers. It's 5 or less in 7 other starts. So the floor is yours for Javier. What do you call him again?
He's the Facade. Javier Facade. And this is, I mean, it's just like poetic justice that Javier Facade, again, because the surface stats, I think, are a facade given the skills. And I know we have Sarah Sanchez in the chat. And resident Cub expert, resident Cub fan who has watched Javier Assad, I'm sure, far more times than me. She's already making the arguments for Assad. She says we need to leave him alone. She says that some of these guys on this red board here have a 3.13 ERA over 273 innings. That would be Javier Assad's career ERA. So the guy has a 3.13 ERA. And so, like, I am trained to look at these skills and be like, this is terrible. Like a 6% swinging strike, I would venture to say that's like bottom 5 in all of baseball among starting pitchers. Like,
do you know what his career K to walk is?
I mean, it's probably awful.
10% career.
10%. It's okay. It's not great. But for a 3.13 ERA, like, I just don't get, and maybe this is one where, like, And Sarah, if you want to chime in, because you've seen him pitch, maybe this is one where just every now and then some of these guys, there's just always a skills results gap. And maybe Javier Facade is doing something that, like, no one else is doing and that the skills don't capture, but the results do. I would be open to that discussion. But Sarah just said, I agree. It doesn't make sense. All right, good.
But then she also said, it's really unfair to portray Assad as a half-season fluke. You've been against him for the whole season.
No, I would agree it's unfair to portray Assad as a half-season fluke. I think it's been a career fluke, not just a half-season. Okay. So.
Well, remember the career 3.13 ERA? He has a career 4.65 Sierra.
Yeah, it's not great. So Sarah says, look at the career left on base percentage. So At Baseball HQ, we use strand rate, which is basically the same thing. Yeah, 80% strand rate, which is just electric. I mean, that's really, really good. 80% of what that means is 80% of base runners that get on base do not score. They get stranded. League average on that is right around like 70%. I'm telling you, like, nobody holds even an upper 70 strand rate for very long. So, maybe Javier Assad is doing something with runners on that, like, no one is capturing. But man, this looks, and again, just fully reinforces the Facade nickname.
A 1.32 career whip.
1.32
career whip.
That's not that great. It's not that great. So I just think it sounds like he's just gotten out of jams. I don't want to say gotten lucky with runners on, but like that's a very high rate for runners to be stranded. 80% is super high.
And Javier Assad is his legal name. He helped me a lot last year in the second half of the season. So I'm a fan.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, he's been great. He's been great.
He actually struck guys out last year, though. That's the confusing part, at least towards the second half of the year. He's just not doing that this year. So who knows? Struck
guys out. The hell are you talking about? He had 20% K rate, dude.
I said in the second half of the year last year. Okay, let me pull this up. We got some time here.
All right. It did skyrocket to 22% K rate there.
Yeah, now we're talking, you know.
It's pretty elite.
It's at least pliable, like doable. Yeah, second half of the year here, he had a 14.4% K to walk, 23% strikeout rate. Like that's outstanding.
Sure.
We're going to keep going back and forth on this, I can tell. But yes, Javier Assad wraps up the board here. So what are your final thoughts when you see this Bloom board, which is a lot of obvious guys on both sides, but still a couple standouts where you're just like, huh, interesting. And a whole lot of pitch to contact. Like that whole bottom board, I wouldn't be rostering most of them.
Right. I mean, and that's why they are at the bottom. I mean, this board is designed if you don't miss bats and you don't get strikeouts, you're going to be near the bottom of this board. Even if you are a quote unquote control artist like Tobias Myers, I just think over time, it's just not going to work out for these guys. So again, these are three of the per pitch metrics that I use all the time when evaluating pitchers. And I just like kind of throwing them all on one board, throwing that up next to an ERA and see who has pitched the most in terms of strike quality. And who's been rewarded for it. Like a lot of these guys, like Schwellenbach, like Sale, like Snell, like King, et cetera, Skubal. And who hasn't been? Like Sonny Gray, your guy. Robbie Ray, your guy.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys on this list.
All above his guys just aren't pitching well, even though they're good. And my guy, Kikuchi. So, I don't know.
Draft skills, not roles, guys. Draft skills, not roles. Just keep drafting skills. It'll work in the end, right?
Well, hey, just look at Pablo Lopez's second half, my friend.
Yep, got that going for him. He's got that going for him. All right. My God, I think one listener question this week, I think. So let me double check as people are heading out for the season. Jeff Biddle asks, he's got a great name, at Topanga Jeff, what would it take for you to draft Gausman next year?
I honestly, it's the price. What would it take? Outside of that obvious answer, I would need to see a velocity increase in September with the split finger looking like it was in its heyday. That's what I would need to see in order to take Gausman. If he drops to like, again, we had our 11 round draft. He did not get picked. If Gausman dropped to like the 13th, 14th, I think I'd have to look at him there. Just because he'd be like an SP4, SP5, it doesn't work out, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's what I'd need to see from Gausman in order for me to kind of go back in. I want to see the velocity come back and the split finger look like it has.
Yeah, it'd have to be an SP4 at best, hopefully an SP5, like you said. That's kind of where the team construct would come into play, and falling would obviously help in drafts. But I don't think he's this bad. I think there's something wrong with him, and I'm hoping that gets figured out for next year so he could become quite the deal when all things are said and done. But time will obviously tell on that one. All right. One thing he's got here. Oh, I have Michael C says, I have one. You mentioned guys with big innings pitch bumps. Are you worried or would you ding Sale? I am worried about Sale. I'll be honest, but I might be overreacting to that. I don't know you, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, that's the old Verducci effect thing that kind of has been debunked, although that was maybe 10 or so years ago. So before answering, my punt would be maybe I should spend a half day and look at big inning spikes and what they did the following year and just see if is there any kind of trend. Does it vary by age? Those types of things is what I would want to see before going back in. But Sale himself in a vacuum, my biggest thing with pitchers, how they look when they finish, and did they finish healthy? And Chris Sale checks both of those boxes. So I'm less concerned than you are, Bubba.
Yeah, it's just like you got Sale, you got Skubal, you got King, you got Crochet. There's going to be a long list of them. So it'll be fun. Would you be more worried about the inning spike list or the I throw so hard list?
The I throw so hard list. Okay. The I throw that's so right. hard list. Yeah.
The Skeens Scooble list. That one.
Yeah. I mean, especially is Scooble on that list?
I thought he was. I could be speaking out. I could be speaking out of school. That happens multiple times on the show.
I mean, it worries me. I don't want to sit here in September and say I'm not going to draft Paul Skeens next year. I don't know if I could get first round price tag on Skeens, just given given how much he puts on his arm. But I could very well be wrong.
Yep, we could all be wrong. That's the fun part about this game. So we'll wrap it up there, Ryan. Another one in the books here. We got a couple more Bloom Board Tuesdays, and then we'll start recapping things and having fun along those lines. And we've got a couple more fab periods for you before it's all said and done. So enjoy your games and all that good stuff. But any final thoughts as we answered that last question, but we'll head out of here.
No, I got nothing else. I had something, but then I forgot.
If you want to play golf in Arizona with us, let us know ASAP because we're starting to book tee times this week. Different golf course. So we'll have some fun and try out a new place. But let us know ASAP if you're interested in that. But unless Ryan remembers things, we're going to head out of here this week. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick, and this was Bubba and Bloom, episode 166. Catch you all next time.